Welcome to the It's All Fine and Dangy podcast, where hosts Dan and Angie talk with creatives, small business owners, charities, and all kinds of interesting people. It's all real talk. It's all fine and dangy.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in this week to take a listen at what's going on in the studio here in the basement in Candler, North Carolina.
That's right. Or a watch if you're on our YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say,
I gotta get better at like remembering that we're recording video now.
On camera.
You know, look at the camera every once in a while.
I'm so pleased that we have had like an uptick right away. I mean, we were building up our audience on YouTube, and then we moved, and then it kind of flatlined. And just within a few videos, it's really picking back up. So thank you guys so much for watching if you're watching on YouTube.
So we have a guest in today that has a very cool story. We've read a little bit about your story, and it's Ofri. Did I say it right? Okay.
Hey,
I'm always so worried. Like, you explain it to me right before, and then I'm like, I'm going to botch it.
But you didn't, though.
Yeah, I didn't. But she is from Asheville Mountain Kitchen. Cool name, yes. Also. And I love how you describe your cooking classes. It's a boutique-style cooking class. That makes me want to go immediately because you know that you're going to get an intimate and different type of experience than you would if you in Florida. We have like aprons. It's like a Publix cooking class.
Right, grocery
you know what
store.
I mean? Like a grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know when you get that word boutique in there, mm-hmm. you're going to get a different kind of experience. So we're super excited to just hear your story, hear what you do, and really talk about the food. I mean, let's not lie.
Yeah.
Like that's what we really want to talk about. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Hi, Dangy. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, there you go. I know. We should just get like a name change. So just make life easy, mm-hmm. you know. But yes, thank you so much for joining us. You're our third guest here in the studio. So we're super excited that we finally are getting people in. And we were just talking pre-recording that a lot of the guests that signed up to be on the show came from like the Asheville Foodies group.
Mm-hmm. Is that where we found you?
I think so.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, it would make sense.
Of course it would.
So it's Ofri Hirsch from the Asheville Mountain Kitchen boutique style cooking classes. And I'm curious, you know, I read a little bit on your website too, but I'm curious about your journey because this is not what you intended your career to be initially.
Yes. I moved to the U.S. to go to grad school and pursue a career in architecture.
Yes.
And not at just some school.
Yeah. I got a full scholarship to Harvard in 2004. So I thought it was an amazing opportunity. But, you know, deep down I knew I wasn't sure I was going to stick with the profession, but. You know, but I said, I'm not going to pass that opportunity.
Yeah, sure. Good profession, right? Can, you know, sustain yourself with that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, I love the school, the program, and we did travel quite a lot. So, and, you know, people always think from architecture to food, they don't see the connection. But just yesterday in the lunchtime class that I do, which are 1 hour short classes, we were making guzleme, which is a Turkish pastry. Someone said, oh, it's like a Turkish quesadilla. It's like it's filled with all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah.
Different cheeses and...
Mind you, we didn't eat lunch before this, so we're going to be like salivating the whole time.
I was telling them when I went on this school project to Turkey, we all, you know, we were in the program at this course we took. And we met with the mayor, and they were expanding the city and building all these new suburbs, like high-rise. Mm-hmm. And the mayor told us that people have said to him, we're not moving somewhere unless we can have guzleme. Because it's like this street food, but it really symbolizes a lot more than that, right? It symbolizes life on the street and... Yeah. The way people are in the Mediterranean, they really expect that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, we have to look this up, for sure.
They're not interested in what we have, you know
what
I mean?
Right. Yeah, of course.
Dead suburb, you know? So it's very much linked, you know? I mean, to me, it's linked. So.
Yeah, and I think, like, architecture, you're building or designing, and really, when you are cooking, you're layering, right? You're building that dish with different flavors,
creating.
Right? Yep. Mm-hmm. So I see the tie-in there, because I do cook, you know? Yeah. We cook a lot at home, so in the Mediterranean flavors are what we are kind of our go-to. Mm-hmm. Like those, you'd never eat a Mediterranean style meal and feel like you're still hungry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're satisfied. Mm-hmm. And the flavors are amazing. So mm-hmm. that is like our go-to, definitely.
And I remember something on your website I read, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, but it said something about, you know, if you don't know how to cook, and we should probably quote it properly, but if you don't know how to cook, I mean, that's like a fundamental thing that changes your health and your finances and everything. And we are excited to come try your course, which we're absolutely going to do because, you know, I was a single dad and I was making like pizza and tacos and spaghetti and all the things that I would say people that don't really know how to cook make. It's like one stage better than fast food, but not real food. So I'm excited to come learn. But, I guess what you're saying is you went to school kind of knowing that this is probably not what I'm going to do. Is that, did you know you were going to do cooking?
It's funny because many years ago, I had a boyfriend and he said, what would you like to do? Because I sort of had the post-college shock, you know, when you start working, you're like, this is what it is.
What have I done?
This isn't fun anymore.
Exactly.
What have I done?
And I said to him, something with people and food.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it was like 20 something years ago.
So that's how long you've been doing this now?
No. So that was like years ago. I just said that.
Oh.
That was just putting it out there, though.
Exactly.
You were just putting it out.
Exactly. Not even thinking of a cooking school.
Just setting the stage for things to line up. That's basically what you were doing.
Yes.
So you just continued on with your architecture after that. Tried to make the best of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then you had like a little turnaround in like 2009 where you had to pay focus a little more on your health, right?
Yes. So this started in 2000. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was diagnosed with lupus in 2004, right before I left to go to the States, not really knowing what that means. Mm. I got extremely sick during the program. I took time off and actually I finished really well somehow the semester. So they offered me even more money to come back. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to finish this. And I made it happen. I finished it. But I was still struggling, and it was very unstable, I would say. Not every day, but very unstable.
Yeah, which lupus usually, my sister has lupus, systemic lupus. And
but eventually I cured myself of it completely.
That is amazing to hear, because it's so inflammatory, right? So
it can get real bad, like it's...
Fatigue and joint pain and almost like you have the flu. That's what my sister describes it as.
Yeah. Yes, but it can get even worse than that.
Yeah.
That was a lot of my life, like a flu type thing, but it also got, you know, hospital sort of worse.
Oh, and wow.
It can get into the internal organs.
Yeah.
And,
kidneys especially, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you educate yourself on that? Because we know there's not I have a background of health and wellness coach, so we know there's so much information, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't give it to you. They don't lay it out and say, here you go. This is what you need to eat. They go, eat healthier. Well, that means something different to everybody. So tell us your journey how you've discovered.
So I also do that, you know, other than the cooking classes, the weekly cooking classes and team building groups that I have, I also health coach. I work with people.
Oh, I love that.
So I could talk about that as well.
This is your time. You get to talk about anything.
I was obsessed. I mean, I used to go to these focus groups and people looked so miserable. And I said, this is not going to be my life. This is definitely not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Focus groups of people with lupus?
Sick, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. Thank you for clarifying. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. I'm still curious. You healed yourself, cured yourself of lupus just by changing your diet, ultimately? Not that that's a simple thing, but...
Diet, yes, but I think it has other layers to it. You know, I do think probably the most important thing to manage is stress.
Yeah,
and getting enough rest.
Oh boy, I'm in trouble.
And that means something else for people with lupus. You know,
yeah.
And then, you know, I would say the diet, and then once you're feeling better, you know, just exercising, being active. All of those, and as well as kind of digging in emotionally too.
Sure.
And you know, we think of trauma and things like got raped or something, but people have all sorts of traumas we don't even acknowledge them as traumas, but they do affect our nervous system.
Of course, you know? Anybody that's been to therapy knows that some of the tics that you may have, you, me, I'm saying me or anyone, are based on something that happened to you.
And any type of stress that you have, good or bad, affects your body, right? A positive or negative, any stress.
Yeah, and I mean, in this culture, we just push ourselves so hard. Mm. And as a mom or any person, really, we don't prioritize ourselves. And that's really the key, you know.
It's so hard to do.
It's so hard to do.
Even putting when yourself the kids first, are gone.
Being selfish, being be selfish in a good way.
Yeah.
Not hurting others.
I love that you said it that way.
But
though.
Putting you yourself, your needs first.
Yeah, yeah. that's a common
it's
thing
a
we do.
It's a very hard to, thing to do.
That's a common thing, and I
especially when you're a selfless person, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which so many people are.
Yeah.
It's you know, especially I don't want to say just mothers, but mothers, father. You know, you put yourself. Everybody else gets taken care of and you're put behind. But we hear that, you know, so many moms come up and say, or people that are teaching, you know, how to self-love more. If you don't take care of yourself first, you're really not giving everybody what they
need.
It's
like putting the mask on, you know. With the, and the other day, my son said, Mama, can you make us dinner? And I said, sure. And he said, Dad says that you always say yes, even though even if you're tired. So it's true, you know.
Well, it makes you think for a minute.
I feel so guilty when I say
But you know what, though? Not to get too philosophical, but you said that emotional tie-in. And I do believe, because I don't, you know, I heard this too as a single dad for a lot of my life, not all, but that... putting yourself last, it's almost like you are subconsciously telling yourself and the universe that you don't matter. And that bounces around in your body and your brain and your thoughts and your emotions. And it's like an unhealthy way to live. And I you know, I heard that in therapy years ago.
Even the energy you put out from that. Yeah.
Because you feel like, you know, your job is to take care of everybody else first. So I think that's hugely important for people to realize, because I feel like even in my own life, once you realize it's okay to prioritize yourself, for me, it's at least at the same level. I don't think I could ever put myself first, but I could put myself and others on the same first tier, so to speak.
Hey, I should be first tier.
Yeah. But I think it makes a difference. I think it immediately makes a difference in the way you feel. And I'm one of these people that's guilty of not sleeping enough or maybe not dealing with stress well. Yeah. But I love to hear you say that, because I never hear people say that. And I heard that years ago in therapy too, that if you're telling yourself you're last, then you're kind of telling your body that you're not important, and that's destructive to your health.
Yeah. So when you were in these groups and you started seeing this, did that give you an idea to start with kind of helping others on this journey that you were kind of setting yourself on?
I wasn't there, no.
Not there
I was
yet?
Just feeling sorry for myself and... you know, why me and all that. And
we
just
all go
really
those.
Struggling, really struggling, you know. I was in pain and suffering for many years. And then I had a lot of trouble giving birth. And, you know, there were many things I had to deal with first before I was ready to support others.
Mm. Yeah. Which is the experience.
Yeah,
that comes
I did it
with
some
too.
Here and there. I used to be obsessed with meeting other women, mostly who have lupus. I mean, some men do, but it's the minority.
Mostly women. Mm-hmm.
So just to meet, hear their story, you know, and I wouldn't give advice, maybe from my experience a little bit, but I wasn't ready to really
take
do that. But now I have just so many, you know, goodness to give to people and really, you know, make a difference. And,
I love that when somebody can, you know, be the support for other people, because like you see, you do get into that mindset of, oh, why is this happening to me? And then you go through the mounds of information out there, right, to try to get yourself to learn more about it or be more prepared about what to expect. And everybody's journey is a little different. So
absolutely.
It's not all cookie cutter. So so that's great that you were, you know, kind of able to start supporting other people, really. And so when did the food let's get into the food, baby.
Yeah.
When did the food, the cooking classes, when did this kind of start to grow, to come to birth?
So food has always been a part of my life. I grew up on a kibbutz in Israel, which is a little self-sustaining community. So we made all the food from scratch.
Awesome.
So I grew up cooking. And then I was obsessed with like learning about different cuisines and things. I traveled. I lived in Australia for 10 years. I traveled to Asia extensively.
Oh, neat.
So I would always learn. I would always ask people, show me this, show me that. Even chasing grandmas I didn't know.
I want to make that.
Because I love home cooking. I love real food, you know. Yeah. I'm really down to earth in that way. I'm not interested in, you know, you got to eat a meal and you have to feel happy. Satisfied.
Yes.
And relaxed, you know?
Well, we were just, we, you know, us being in Asheville, you know, we're food, self-proclaimed foodies, you know? We love to try new cuisine and local places that are really cooking from scratch. Mm-hmm. But if we do happen to go someplace where it wasn't that great, you'd feel like there's this letdown, mm-hmm. right? You're like, man, we could have like cooked at home and it would have been so much better.
And better, and better for you too.
And better for you, you know? But I totally get the cooking at home, but also there's something else that comes with like cooking in a group setting. You know what I mean? It's like that family.
It's communal.
Feel, and it's therapeutic.
And I think it's in our genes. It's like, you know, you feel it makes you feel at home without you even realizing it.
Sure.
You know, even if you didn't grow up cooking like I did.
It's the smells and the textures.
It just
textures
puts people at ease.
I agree.
Because we did it. We did it. Your ancestors somewhere at some point.
That's right.
Did it. And it's in us, you know.
Yeah. Well, I feel like
it's not far removed from us because like my great grandparents were my great grannies were always in the kitchen.
Exactly.
By hand, no measuring cups, mm-hmm. pie crust from home.
Yeah, that's
you know
my
what
mom.
I mean? Like that was the kind of cooking I grew up
not
on.
Not the scrambling at 6 p.m., you know.
No.
That's not
like
Right. Yeah. It was and things would cook all day sometimes.
Oh yeah,
you know?
You're starting dinner at breakfast, right?
Yeah.
Like that mm-hmm. kind of environment. Yeah. And that's, you know, you're like all your senses are just kind of revolve around those smells.
And it plays into your memories and your emotions. And I agree with you. I think there's sort of a bonding that happens when people cook together. And I think in a large way, we've lost a lot of that. And that's why people supplement that with going out to dinner where you're eating food that's not good for you, but you still feel like you're around people. I mean, that's part of the reason that
could be.
We
it's
like
not
it.
Nearly as bonding as cooking together.
Oh, of course not. No, I feel like it's almost the illusion of bonding mm-hmm. but it's a need for that, like it's a need for that bonding, and this reminds me of Violet Silly Yaya, who's a friend of ours that's been on the show.
She's Greek, but they're always cooking.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But that's part of. I mean, it's you could just tell it's just
Sunday family dinners. Like they're always everybody's there.
It like warms everybody's heart to just to get together for that.
Yeah,
I mean, we had that growing up too. I think maybe the difference is like. The Mediterranean foods and the Greek foods are healthy for you. We grew up in like the South and the country where it's a bond. The bonding thing is still there, but we learned to eat a lot of really bad food. So we're having to break those habits.
Fried.
From eating the fried gravy and all the things that were, they're so bad for us. So
they taste so delicious sometimes.
Yeah.
So.
But once in a while. But so I guess I'm... So when did you decide to make the leap? Like, so you were diagnosed with lupus, and I get that you had like, I think anyone in that situation has at least some time of sort of just feeling bad about the whole situation. But when did it start kind of clicking to you that I have to do something different here?
In terms of my health or profession?
Well, I think both, because I can't help but think
I feel like one ties into the other.
Right, me
so,
too.
Yeah.
So I've cooked for many years to support myself as a student. And even after I graduated, I still work on weekends. I worked at this restaurant.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. I just enjoyed it. And then the recession, previous one, that was in 2008, 2009, came about. And I was let go of my work. So I started cooking as a personal chef.
Okay.
But then soon, like a month into it, I was telling my husband, I just want to help people with special diets because I've tried every diet on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I like the creativity of it and figuring it out. And
were you having to make things that maybe weren't healthy or you just weren't into as far as the personal chef thing?
Well, there was a little bit of that. Like people would print out stuff from like the Food Network and stuff. And they think that that's like what you're supposed to eat.
Been
like
there.
A stick of butter. You know, cup of cream. Like right. I'm like, you know, you can't eat that every day.
You might as well go
it's
to
it's okay.
Fast food. Yeah.
It's really hard too when you are trained, you know, to be a health coach or know the the good and bad behind things and the science behind it. It's hard to make it. It's like
you feel like you're poisoning people
almost. Yeah, yes. You feel like you're not contributing to anything good. Mm-hmm. So I know that had to have been a struggle for you.
Yes. Yes, and I had a really solid group of clientele, helped a lot of people, and even started sort of produced pureed foods for people with dysphagia, with swallowing problems.
Oh.
So like that is naturally made and suitable, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of rules. There's
guidelines,
a lot that goes
it.
Into that.
Pureed foods, like is it making it like a paste almost?
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow!
Yeah, different levels of you know how runny it is, consistencies different.
I just picture baby food, basically, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, but it's different to baby food.
Yeah. And,
very nutrient dense.
Yeah, nutrient dense, and baby food goes through this process of sterilization, really takes a lot of the nutrients.
Like pasteurizing
out.
Or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also there's, you know, you can't use spices and salt, and there's a lot of things that went into that, but we had a line and worked with a lot of, you know, care facilities and just individuals with that as
so
well.
So was that something you did as like a cottage kitchen type? Am I saying that right? Cottage kitchen?
No,
or did you have a
it
facility?
It was a business, and I outsourced the cooking to a catering company.
Oh,
so
okay.
They prepared my recipes and then we shipped it.
Oh, nice.
Everywhere.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that probably made you feel good, though, because you knew that what you were delivering was a product mm-hmm. that these people needed in order to kind of get on a path to being healthy.
And it was interesting. I was one day at the rheumatologist mm-hmm. For my own appointment, and she knew what I was doing, and she wasn't the nicest woman, and she always kind of felt like, what do you mean we doctors don't know how to treat it? You know, we know how to treat it.
But oh, they don't like
said,
to hear that.
Exactly. So she used to kind of butt heads with me. And she had a resident that day, and she was telling him what I do. And they said, you know, actually, my friends, their son was sick, and someone came in and taught them how to make all this food. And he got so much better. And that was me.
Yeah.
So those people.
Oh, that was you. That was literally you?
That was me.
Oh, but I thought you meant it was.
They didn't know it was you.
She didn't know that it was me. So she, and they're both doctors.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They really appreciated what I did with their son.
Oh, wow. I thought you meant that was me, like meaning that's the kind of thing I did, but that was literally you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a real good punch.
Oh, I doubt.
Like,
no doubt.
Yeah, because, you know, they're not educated in that realm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're educated in medicine and treating the problem. And here's some anti-inflammatories and, you know, go on your way. And
they don't learn nutrition. They learn about drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I
drugs and finances.
Yeah.
That's what doctors learn about. Mm-hmm. We know this. I mean, I've had many doctors that were my professors.
Yeah.
That they straight up will tell you that.
Yeah.
I know. And I it's gotten to the point for me as I get older where when you go to the doctor for some new thing that happened, you have a skin condition or you have a nerve related issue or things that I've been through in the past, say 5 years, where the first thing they ask you, the first words out of their mouth are, who's your insurance company? Where's your pharmacy? And it's frustrating to me. It's like, wait a minute, why are we going straight to that? Because it is never a recommendation of diet unless it's an afterthought. It's take this, take that also, and change your diet. It's not change your diet first.
There's no education that comes with the change your diet. Like we mentioned earlier, it's eat healthier. That means so much. So many different things on so many different levels. That could mean to one person that's maybe, you know, gets a diabetes diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. That could mean, oh, well, I'm going to switch to Diet Coke instead of regular Coke. Mm-hmm. That's what they in their brain think is healthy. Mm-hmm. We think that's stupid, right? Oh, my God, don't do that. But to them, they know no better. So that's what they do.
And I'll say even for me, like when the doctor says eat healthier, more vegetables, less red meat. You know what I mean? It's a hard, unless you're educated on it like you are, it's hard for people to know.
Well, back in Boston, when I used to cook for people, I would tell them, you have to figure out your diet and I will help you implement it and teach you how to do it. I really didn't want to get in there and telling people. I didn't feel like I could do that to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People probably get pushed back on that too, right? Like it's how much do you really want to get better? That's the question.
Yeah, it's a huge commitment. There's no question about it. It's a very, very big commitment.
And it's hard. You have to have kind of, when you're a health and wellness coach, you have to have tough love, right, too. So you have to have empathy and compassion. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if somebody really wants your help in getting better, you have to be tough.
But I even hear,
and that's hard
even
to
here
do.
In town, I meet a lot of functional medicine doctors or people who do consider food as medicine. And I
love that.
Often, not let's say not everyone I meet has that kind of compassion you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I've heard them say, I expect my patients to just do what I tell them. And if I told them not to eat bread or whatever, I expect them to do it. And you know what? If it only was so simple.
I
think it's harder than quitting smoking. I mean, you've been eating for your whole life since zero.
Well, I mean, as an example, I quit smoking 30 years ago and I haven't quit eating bread still.
Exactly. You're the example.
Because the other thing is, food is associated with emotions. There's more
that,
you know, and your palate changes. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more that goes into
it. And social
it. Things. Yes, it's social. Yeah, it's you
it's
know,
very involved. There,
it's, and, so, yeah. it's so much more to it than just stop doing it. Like,
so
seriously.
I agree with you. The compassion is a huge part in helping people. And you have to really...
Because it's like breaking a habit. I mean, it really is like breaking a habit. Yeah. And I just think of all the things that have like a soft spot in my heart for like my mom's homemade spaghetti or homemade chocolate chip cookies, things that are, we both know
you're
that's
not
bad
gonna
for
say
your health.
No to it if it's sitting in front of you.
But you have like the happiest moments of your life that you've attached to that. So I feel like you're right. If you don't have some compassion for how hard that is for people and just say, well, don't eat it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, come on.
Yeah, you have to be forgiving as their coach. You
it's
know,
a process. You have to understand it's a process. You need mentorship, guidance for sure. You need to put yourself first. All these things are really
it's
important.
It's like a therapy session when you are talking about food.
And your clients aren't going to be honest with you if you're not compassionate either. It's like when we talk to to the financial advisor, and he says, "When you get in front of me, you got to get naked." Meaning, don't be hiding
don't be
money. Don't be telling me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't spent any. You know what I mean? Because if you're
we never eat out,
right?
But then he looks at your ledger.
But if you're, but if you have, yourself, if you have people that you're trying to help and your customers, and they're not being honest with you, and well, I don't know why I'm not feeling better. I've been following the diet and they're really sneaking food. Mm-hmm. I feel like the more passionate and compassionate you are with them, the more honest they're going to be if they slip up.
Yes. Easier to reveal, you know?
Yeah,
definitely. So let's kind of get into the transition of the classes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've already, you know, you're kind of coming that full circle to get into where you are now.
Yeah. So we moved here 8 years ago from Boston, and I worked actually, I started working with someone in my profession, and we sort of moved here, my husband and I, and thought, well, we want to do what we want to do. Like, we want to really live the life we wanted to live and not feel the pressure like we felt in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds
and
familiar.
And he wanted to do music, and and he said, what do you want to, and I said,
well, you guys are
I'd love
the perfect
to teach cooking
place
classes.
For that.
Yeah.
Know? Food and music, like an artist and food.
Exactly.
Perfect and, place, Asheville.
Yeah.
So he said he wanted to do music, and you said, do you want to do cooking classes? That's wow.
And I started with, I called it Israeli food, and not many people signed up. So then I changed it to Mediterranean diet class. And then I kept adding more things. Oh, I could teach this. I could teach that. You know, I mean, they're all either places I lived at or I knew the diet really well.
Right.
And the techniques and preparing and stuff like that. So that's always interesting to learn, you know, a new technique or why they cook things a certain way.
Yeah. I love diving into why and the history and seeing how cuisines influence each other. Like the Mediterranean is a great example because people have lived there for thousands of years, traded. So it's almost like the same food, but just gets a different tweak on it.
And that's one of the things when your classes that you do are small, intimate classes, and you're not just working at a station and cutting something and adding it. You're teaching people how to make three or more dishes.
Yeah,
right?
Even up to six.
Wow. Because that's how it is in a kitchen. You're not just making one thing at a time. When you're in a kitchen, you're like, got to get the potatoes on, and you got to time it. And
that's the part that is very difficult for me, figuring out the timing. So.
And I am kind of like an octopus. I'm pretty good, and I've been told I'm pretty good at, you know, you do this, you do that. Like, I'm always, like, working. Maybe it's my attention deficit or something.
Yeah,
like,
but that's how professional chefs operate.
Yeah. We all cook it together. So I don't stick you in the corner to make one dish.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
but we
great.
Really cook. Like, you know, I've taken some classes in other places and a lot of them were like, we made one little thing and everything was pre-prepared.
Yeah.
So now in my class, you cook everything.
From the beginning to the end.
I love that.
These are relatively small classes, right, that you do at a time?
About 10 people. Yeah.
That's probably about as big as you can get and be manageable.
And everybody can still have conversation. And one of the things you do kind of during the class, we were just talking about, you kind of educate about the dishes that you're making, the history of them, or where they came from. Yes. So people are learning, you know, about the food
they're
making.
A friend of mine said, I do cooking for geeks. That's what she called my classes.
Oh, I would love it then.
It's got the science behind it, the history behind it. Like the whys, the wheres. You need all those questions answered when you're cooking.
Oh, I love it. And then like at the end of the course, I guess, at the end of the class, everybody sits down and eats all of it?
Yep.
Oh,
some classes we eat on the go, like the dumplings class. Some classes are like that.
You mean eat along the way?
We just kind of nibble. We make the gyoza, we eat them. We make this, we eat them.
That's cool. Know? It's like tapas kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do when you're cooking too, because you have to taste. You have to make sure you got enough salt or, you know. Sure. So you're kind of doing that in the kitchen anyway. It teaches people that balance, because you can't just cook something for somebody and not taste it.
Yeah.
I have done that one time and it wasn't good.
Yeah.
I'm like, just throw the soup all together, you know, it'll be great.
I also had a few people just last weekend. I had two classes, and in each one there was a guy who grew up with a mom who was like one from Thailand. I think the other one was Cambodian. And I said, so do you cook the food? Did she teach you? And he said, no, she just like puts it all and I don't know what she's doing. And she told me, just look. And I don't know how to do it. Like, you know, I told him that in my Thai class, for example, like I really break it down. We taste each ingredient and I really talk about how they put together, you know, how the cuisine, it's like a puzzle.
Yeah.
So that every cuisine has that kind of like code.
Yeah.
And I hopefully that's at least
my
intention.
I like that you called it a code.
That's... is to really kind of crack that code and make it simple so you see how it's put together.
Yeah.
So then you can make more dishes and really understand and be able to balance the flavors yourself.
Because in Thai, you have a lot of like sweet with the heat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So learning how that one calms that one down a little bit.
Correct.
That's great. Correct. But I love that.
But I love how you said it that way, because as someone who doesn't really know how to cook, that's the thing. I could nail a good meal from a recipe that I'm following, but I don't understand the way things go together. So sometimes Angie, I'll say there's nothing to eat. I have to go to the grocery store and buy groceries, and she'll go in the fridge and the pantry and get the weirdest stuff together and make an amazing meal. And I'm like, well, I don't understand what goes with what. And
then
know.
He also says, oh, you have to make that egg. And I go, nope, that's a one and done. I don't write the recipe down. Yeah. So bad about that.
But about that little trick you said, I forget what you called it, but the little thing that sort of clicks that makes it the relationship between spices.
To understand, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's better to understand than just follow recipe.
Right. Because there's times I'll say, oh, I could put hot sauce on this or something. And Angie's like, no, this
Please
is
don't
like
ruin a, my food.
It's a totally different kind of food. And that's where I don't understand. So I feel like there's huge value, because then you can get creative on your own later.
Look, I don't know how you get, but I get insulted. So. Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you know, you make something and it's kind of on the salty side, let's say.
Yeah.
You can add a little sweetness to soften that, or a little acid to break that, you know? And just the tension between these flavors is what really cooking is.
Yeah.
The balance of those elements.
Right. But if you don't know those tricks, then you've ruined the meal, because now it's too salty or now it's too hot.
So in my classes, I don't even print recipes out. We learn concepts, and I want people looking and understanding and feeling and touching to see, you know, what a gnocchi is supposed to feel like. Because every potato is going to be different.
Sure.
You know, and recipes are good. I always compare it to music notes. But everybody plays Beethoven differently.
Sure, a little bit differently, yeah.
It's all up to the implementation of things. And they could really hinder cooking.
Of course, yeah.
Nobody wants to come home from work at 6 o'clock and look up a recipe and like, measure everything. No, that's like not
but
possible.
See, that's the part of it that's been a downer to me, because I always envy people that, and we have some dear friends back in Florida that's Italian and likes to cook, and he's always cook. And I picture if I came home from work and I could have a glass of wine and I could experiment in the kitchen and it would just be such a great vibe in there, and then dinner's ready. But it is me reading the menu, reading the recipe, and It's not fun at all.
That's because you don't yet have the confidence.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Or the understanding of how the flavors are put together. But you can learn that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come to your class, and I'm totally excited.
I also have an online course, which is why I created it. And it's It has recipes, but it's called, well, I called it 1 hour week because you make food for the week in 1 hour. And it teaches like you home prep, cooking, yeah. like what you do yeah. naturally, which mm-hmm. a lot of people do naturally. It's just, you know, you kind of put things, you improvise.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And so you're keeping things pretty simple in class too. So that mm-hmm. these are things that mm-hmm. it's not going to be so overwhelming to mm-hmm. where it's like, I could never do this.
No.
Like when you keep it simple and
I simplify things. That's yeah. That's what I do in my classes.
Well, we're definitely coming mm-hmm. to have a class in person, at least one. But I'm just curious about the online thing for a minute. Is it like videos and such?
Yeah, so there's videos. And I wanted to create a meal prep. But every meal prep I've seen, like it's like an accumulation of recipes. So yeah. basically you get 5, 6, 7 recipes for the week.
Right.
Well, nobody makes 5 recipes from scratch. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I make a big bowl of soup, another stew. Yeah. And maybe some quiche or something.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what we eat
for the week. Right. That's kind of how we are.
Or yeah. what we do is I like to do a theme every week.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's Mediterranean. And because then people
you have the same ingredients.
Yeah, that's
same
exactly
ingredients.
Right.
Yeah. You're saving so much money, especially
yes.
if you love that type of food and
exactly.
you buy in bulk.
That's exactly what this is.
It's
so every
like,
week
yeah.
you make a main sauce.
Yeah.
Let's say harissa. Like a Moroccan pepper spicy sauce.
Oh, you're killing me. We should have ate before this.
And then we use it in various ways, you know, and let's say roast vegetables and we put some vegetables in the meatballs, like grind it into the
yep.
meat. Some we have as a side. Some we make a soup out of,
yeah.
you know, so you make it all together.
Yeah,
and
I
then
love it.
You have like a basis. So even if you don't finish, let's say you want one night you have fish. And you put a little harissa on it and stick it in the grill right before dinner. So you have a little prep to do, but most of it is there and you've got it already made.
Yeah.
So it becomes quick
meals. So
you
work kind of horizontally like a home cook would do rather than.
Yeah. Because the thing that takes the time are the sauces and the bases
exactly.
and stuff like that. Throwing
exactly.
your meat on the grill or sauteing some vegetables
yes.
up. That's pretty much the easy
yes.
part. You don't need much mm-hmm. seasoning or anything on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let the vegetable and the herbs do the, you know, talking,
yes.
basically.
But this way you learn every week. Each week you learn a different type of Mediterranean flavoring, you know, so you can
oh.
add that to your
oh,
repertoire,
yes.
too.
Oh, we might be
know?
Very interested in that.
And
yes.
then I want to do both.
And you might do like preserved lemons, and then 2 weeks later we're going to use them to, you know, for that week or preserve of a lemon week.
Oh, preserving
and,
them.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
we use a lot of lemons. So that would be interesting
but
to
preserved
learn.
Lemons are amazing because it's like the essence of lemon without the acidity or the bitterness that come.
Yeah.
And you eat the whole lemon. The whole thing, the skin
so
and everything. So it's like a lemon candy or lemon spice.
Oh,
I want to learn that.
Okay. We're in for sure.
I got to learn that.
I think we should go to the course in person and then start the online thing, or at least for me.
So you do some different type of courses. I saw you did like some lunchtime ones. I love that you, because a lot of people, maybe that's the only time they have. But then you have some longer ones that are on weekends sometimes. Tell us a little bit about your different types of courses.
Yeah, so my scheduled classes are only on Friday and Saturday. I do lunch classes on both Friday and Saturday that are 1 hour.
Wow.
So just a little thing. Like I said, we made guzlame yesterday and a little salad, and that's it. The night class is 3 hours, and we make like 5, 6 dishes.
That's the one I want to start with.
Yeah, of course.
And then... Yeah, and I recently moved downtown, but that's why I started doing the lunch classes.
Okay. So are you in a building downtown?
Yes.
You said it's a home setting. So I thought
because
it
was
out
of
my
house. Yeah, it was out of my house for 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and a couple of months ago, I moved downtown to 19 Eagle Street.
Awesome.
And I use that space. It's not my space. I rent it.
Yeah.
But I have all my stuff and set up there.
Very cool. Are you able to kind of create a decor in there to make it kind of homey, or is it more of like a kitchen setting?
It's neither this nor that. It's got a little office feel, but because we have huge windows to the street, I love that. There's a lot of natural light.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really pretty
space. And people
space.
Can kind of look in as
yeah.
they're going by.
People
and see
walk
the cooking.
In, and we do take walk-ins as well.
Oh, cool.
And people have been kind of popping in.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
so many, you know.
Super fun.
Yeah, tourists even looking for cool things mm-hmm. to do in the city.
Yeah, it used to be at my house, though. Yeah,
that's cool. I would think that this is also a common date night kind of thing, too,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially
yeah.
for for the longer course. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to do. I know I keep saying that, but we'll set up for your dinner course and then go from there. And then I'm going to sound like the booze hound for asking this, but I know this is why you put it on the list.
Of course.
You can bring like a bottle of wine while you're doing it. Oh, that's awesome.
That is amazing. Yep. Do you ever make suggestions on like what would pair well with what you're making?
I do.
I love that.
Especially for like New Year's Eve, things like that. And
Yeah. And how are you partnering with, I saw that you're big at on partnering with local businesses and especially getting your food from as many local vendors as possible. Who do you partner with and
I just try to go to farmers markets.
Okay.
You know, because I don't have like, I'm not a restaurant. I don't have that kind of bulk.
That you need to buy. You know,
but I do try whenever I can to go to get stuff at the farmers market.
Yeah, I would say.
I love that.
Yeah, getting local vegetables.
There's nothing I admire more than fresh vegetables.
Yeah, me too. And it contributes
so amazingly beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know when you're just, and when you can pick it up and like a red bell pepper. You do not pick up a red bell pepper in the store and smell anything.
It smells like wax.
But when you pick a red bell pepper up, it's got that beautiful just like silky red color from a farmer's market and you put it near your nose, you can smell it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh gosh.
Well, that contributes to the health of the meal too, right? When it's all local stuff, when it's locally grown and stuff too. I know it tastes better, at least to me.
Yeah, definitely. When we moved here in December, I went to Ingles and I said to the guy there, is there anything fresh? And he says, yeah, this is all fresh. No, like fresh.
Yeah, right.
Nothing.
Like, did you get it from down the road?
We're still learning too because we're new here and we're going through the same thing where we're like, where do we get? So we went to the farmer's market and got fresh vegetables. Well, that's hard for me to say.
Fresh vegetables.
And like locally butchered meat and just the things that will be our standard operating procedure as soon as we know where to get everything just because it's so much better. It tastes so much better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're supporting local. And that's very, very important to us, obviously.
Of course,
There was something else I was going to ask and I lost it. Oh, you partner, don't you do something with the Asheville walking tours?
Yeah. So Jordan, Dottie, and myself, she runs the free Asheville walking tours, partnered up. So you could do a tour and a lunch.
I love that. Oh,
a lunch and a tour, because she has one in the morning and one in the afternoon.
So like a lunch class and a tour.
Yeah.
And your lunch class is only an hour. You know what's so cool about that is that's about the amount of time it takes people to just to eat lunch, but to be able to make your own lunch, learn the recipe, and eat the lunch at the same time, that's a win-win. So you could do it on your lunch break from work.
It's great for like business meetings. It's really fun.
Yeah, well, those are good.
Like a team build.
I was going to say, those are good team building. Team building.
You can't talk today. What's happening?
I don't know.
You're hungry.
I'm hungry.
Your glucose levels have
exactly
dropped.
Right. Passing out.
Yeah, last night I had 25 volleyball players from Clemson and we did a team building.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
Yeah. Workshop and, class.
But you do big corporate events too, because you said like 100 people. How do you accommodate that? What do? You go to them? Do they come to you?
No, they come to me or we go to another venue. We might rent another venue. I do various competitions.
Oh, with the groups?
Yes.
Oh, that's fun.
Competitions. Sometimes a hybrid, so it's a cooking class and a competition, all different.
Who does the judging at the end?
Sometimes me. Sometimes they have their own judges. Oh. Sometimes we just rank, like each team I make two dishes, and then we rank all the dishes regardless of the team, and then see the winning dish.
I picture like a Top Chef. Yes, chef, you messed that up. Yeah. Yes, chef, at the end. I bet that's really fun. I was thinking also, too, young people, if people can get their kids in there, there's huge value in teaching young people how to cook when they're young.
Yes.
Because otherwise you end up like me making, burgers and steak forever.
Or groups of people that are just used to just ordering Uber.
Which is, there's a huge segment of a current young generation that, they're not getting any experience.
Well, I have camps over the summer, which I haven't done before.
Oh, you're just starting these?
Yeah, downtown. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
We'll take them on little excursions every day. We'll go and visit one of the shops in town and learn about that. Like, there's a knife store right across from me called the Crafted Edge. So we'll go there and learn knife skills and cook things that require a lot of cutting, so we'll have that skill. Then we go to olive oil store and just visit.
See, so you are definitely, that's a great partnership with those other places.
Yes.
Because even if you don't physically have, you know, a partnership, you're supporting them by saying, look, we use stuff from here, or this is cool.
Yeah.
You can try the olive oils here.
Yeah.
Does downtown Asheville, because I thought I remembered this from one of our many times we vacationed here, do they have like a little public garden or something?
They I think it's a flower garden. By the Pinball Museum, there's like a fenced in area with a bunch of plants in it, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, that one, yeah.
I was wondering if there's like an herb garden or something like that.
Yeah, that would be great. And be I cool. think there is one more like in the south part of the city, but I have to look into that where there's a pedestrian bridge that goes over the highway.
I might be remembering another town. But
no, I know what you're talking about because we took pictures in there.
It's like next to a building and you just walk in and
it had a little sign near the pinball. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool though.
Yeah, like, that's a good idea.
You know, we've met with places in Florida that Fleet Farming is one I was thinking.
Yeah.
And they're like an urban farming. And they ride their bicycles around like downtown Orlando, and they encourage people to plant yards that are, why can't I think of the name of it?
Edible
gardens.
Edible gardens. And then what they'll do is they'll come kind of help you maintain, and they take a certain amount, they forage a certain amount, and they'll sell them at like the farmer's markets stuff, or donate it to other local places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's volunteers that are doing this.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing story that, you know, they're just, you know, and restaurants would buy stuff from them too. So that's how they kind of support themselves, by helping build, you know, you pay to help them build you an edible landscape. And
yeah.
I just thought that, like, amazing. Something like that would be really cool in downtown.
I was thinking too, I agree, Angie, that was a really cool experience, kind of meeting with them and seeing what they do. But back to the summer camp, I guess, thing is, it, if that's what it's called. But you're teaching young people how to cook. You're helping to keep your business alive. You're promoting other local small businesses. That's like you're knocking all the sort of check
checking
boxes
all the
out.
Boxes.
Yeah,
right?
That's a great idea to help promote other businesses, to show young people how to cook and eat right. And to keep your own business.
Who is signing up for these classes? Is this like a lot of homeschooled kids? Is this just kids that are out of school for the summer? They're just a little variety
just
of
summer. Yeah, during the summer. Just kids. Yeah, of all different ages. And
cool. What does a class
like
that look like?
Some people ask me, what is the age range? I on the website, it says 8 to 14. But I always tell them, if the kid is into it, I don't care really what age they are. If they want to do it,
if they can understand the concept
and they're into it, you know, I think being into it is,
you never know what that's going to spark. Yeah, that might be the next, you know, big chef in 20 years or so.
And at the very least, they are going to have a better chance of being more healthy and more financially sound from cooking
at
home.
Definitely. And even like you said, it's so correct, knowing what goes into your food. Knowing if something's sweet, you realize it's like 2 cups of sugar went into that thing. Right. Like when you don't cook, you don't know that stuff.
No,
you know.
No.
Yeah, luckily, just from us being together for so long, but I'll eat like baked goods or a chocolate covered pretzel or something. But I don't. As a general rule, we don't really eat sugar. We don't drink soda.
We don't
drink sweet tea.
Yeah,
those are the things that I feel like a lot of people struggle with. Is just sodas and teas and sugar.
Just knocking off added sugar makes a whole world of difference.
Yes.
Inflammation goes down significantly.
And it's in everything. It's in, we'll read like a packaged meat has sugar in it. And you're like, wow, it's just keeping you addicted.
It's everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they say it's a natural preservative. So that's why it's in there.
There's 50 words, 50 different names for sugar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's a huge industry. There's a reason.
My favorite is when it's like, high fructose corn syrup.
Like, the first seven
barley malt is sugar.
Barley malt.
The first seven ingredients are sugar. They just word it differently.
Rice syrup, tapioca syrup. I mean, it's so many things.
It's in things that don't make any sense to me, like meat, which I'm a conspiracy theorist on this one, but I think it's just big sugar. They want you addicted to it.
And what is the rule? If there's like 5 ingredients or more in it, put it back. You know what I mean?
The thing you taught me is if you can't pronounce the ingredients, put it back.
You probably don't want it in your body. Unless they're naming the, like, you know, the scientific name for, like, you know, lavender or something, you know, because sometimes they do that and you're like, what is this? And
I just meant the ones that read like almost if you're reading like a prescription drug ingredient, that's what they start looking like, because it's these words with 16 syllables in them that are, it's clearly some sort of a chemical they've added.
Yeah.
Sometimes I bring design into the, especially with the corporate groups. If they're open-minded enough, I bring design into it, and like they have to create a dish. And kind of like they have to choose someone to dedicate that dish to. It could be a person. It could be the year 2024. It could be
any kind of
entity.
Oh, yeah.
But they have to explain why, you know, they made what they made for that entity, and how, you know, is it a gift? Is it something they need? Is it whatever? And just kind of think of the symbolism of food and
the meat,
or how they arranged it, or whatever. Yeah. You know, think about reasoning, you know.
More like meaning behind
deliberate,
the dish.
Being more deliberate. Yeah. And
then just
really
trying
cool.
to feed myself or
that's
somebody.
That's a really cool little exercise.
Yes,
I like
exactly.
that. Especially people that are like really thinkers, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That really
and
gets
able
them engaged.
To abstract, you know, if you're able to abstract ideas and things.
I love that.
But I feel like that sort of, for my brain, that injects more the value of food into my brain than just nourishment, right? Than just... that injects sort of the tradition thought again, and the memories and the emotions and all that kind of stuff.
Food is a lot more than, and you know, team building does not have, you don't have to wait to work in a corporation to do corporate team building. You can do it in your family.
Sure.
You know, with your kids.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Because it's almost relationship.
It just bonds. It bonds you.
Yeah.
You
know?
They should call it relationship building instead of team building.
Yeah. It's like going hiking, or it's an experience that you do with someone.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, I was thinking when we're just talking about, you know, how it bonds you and stuff. Where does everybody hang out when they come to your house? Where does everybody just want to gather? You have this big, beautiful couch or sitting area. Nobody sits
there.
The
deck.
You know, it's usually where the food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean in general? Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm telling you, you can have the tiniest kitchen and everybody's in there and you're like, guys, you know, we need to cook here. But that is traditionally, as we go back, that's how it was. Yeah. Everybody was there, hands on. Somebody was helping with something.
Yeah. That's
but
why
even, we're... Yeah. Before I had a cooking school, even when I would invite people over, like I would never quite finish the meal. And like I love when people help me out. And
what can I help with? Yeah.
They're part of it.
Yeah,
not
of
just
course.
Being sitting there being served.
Waiting.
Like, you know, there's something... you know, when you work hard, like kids, you know, it bonds you to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're part of it, of the process, you know.
And then discovering how it tastes together, cleaning up together. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at the family events, at the big holidays and stuff. But some families seems like they do that all the time, not just at holidays. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I envy that sort of vibe.
I do love when I see families that are still doing that. Mm-hmm. Everybody's involved. Everybody's got their job, from the littlest setting the table to... You know,
it's very inclusive, very inclusive.
Like,
some people use cooking as therapy too, like art therapy. I mean, it's a great time if you're cooking with your kid to talk to them, you know?
Yeah.
And
you're doing stuff, you don't have to look at each other.
Things might come up that would never come up if you're doing that serious sit down talk. So that is,
exactly.
And I think what you're saying,
with your hands.
Ofri, is the lack of that, because I remember this as a parent, the lack of that. Sort of weird, formal. We sat down. We're looking at each other. Yeah. It's already not going well. We haven't said anything yet.
It's uncomfortable.
It's like your hands are busy. Your brain is busy, and it makes it maybe easier for them to talk to you because it's not such a big weight
like
hanging
the
over.
The relaxing feeling.
Yeah.
The relaxing feeling.
It is.
All the senses are, you know, being kind of
Because food is at our core. It's such a fundamental thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I love that you just have all these different. Cuisines like under your belt that you're able to share with other people instead of just one, you know, you've really shown such an interest in different cuisines and learned how to make them that you can pass that on to other people. So you're doing the summer camp. What else? What else is in the future? What are the big dreams?
Oh, dreams. So we're actually filming a TV show.
Oh,
are now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
About to start.
Well, where can we see it?
Are we doing that?
And I would love to. We're still talking about the content, but I would love to bring more of that health thing through, you know,
into the food. Yeah,
a lot of doctors have taken my course, the online one, and You know, I like that, and I'd like to do maybe more of that. And then make it really accessible to a wider range of audience, because it's such useful information.
Yeah. No question.
So a TV show, are you thinking like doing like a subscription type thing for it?
So
like...
it will be broadcast on our, you can find it on Roku. It will be.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is amazing.
But I don't want to get into too many details.
That's just a teaser, people. That's just a teaser. Okay, very cool.
That is very cool. I get what you're saying, where you don't want to get in trouble for the stuff you're not supposed to.
I have another dream is that I would love to go to different places around the world and really document that grandma food that is undocumented.
Yeah.
It's oral history, you know, it's like this
Nothing's written down. Yeah.
And I have a friend who married an Indian guy from the Punjab, but like really remote northern India, very agricultural area, mm-hmm. not from the city. And she said his mom cooks amazing food, and like, you know, she doesn't speak English or anything, but just like we have to document it.
Yeah. The stuff that's just gone generation to generation by teaching that is going to get lost.
And just do like a series of books like that. That'd be amazing. That's my dream.
I was just thinking if you had a show where you're going to those places and learning it and documenting it.
That would be expensive to produce, but yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah.
And dream big.
Yeah, yes. The community part of it, because we have somebody... oh, goodness, my brain went blank.
I might be able to help you.
The author who lives in Turkey, Jane.
Oh, Jane Gooding, yeah.
So we had Jane on, and she, you know, was on the show via, you know, Skype, and she lives in Turkey. She retired there, and she has this huge olive tree in her front yard, and there's so many olives, she can't do anything with it. So she will glean it, and then she takes it to the local shop. They press it for her, and then... she just lets, you know, people come and just, you know, take what you need. But it's very communal. Like, everybody shares, and she don't keep it to herself or sell it. They just press her amount of olive oil, and then
she goes on. Lets them also glean from the tree when she's done, too. So it's a very... I just love that vibe. I feel like that's missing a lot here, but that... No, I'm not saying...
somebody steps on your property.
I'm not saying here in North Carolina. I'm saying here in the U.S. That sort of...
It's not our vibe. In the U.S., you know, it's definitely other cultures when you go to. It's definitely you
the
will
communal
see it,
vibe.
That more communal
vibe. Yeah. We can chip away at that.
We can. We sure can.
So how do people find out more about you and your courses and what you're up to next?
It's all on my website, AshevilleMountainKitchen.com.
Oh, nice. We'll put a link in the show
Instagram,
notes for that.
All that, Facebook, you know.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I'm not the best at marketing, but I really do a labor of love and I love what I do.
Yeah.
The marketing is the hardest part. Are you kidding?
We're not so great at that either. It's it's unnatural.
Yeah.
It's like I just want someone to go.
It's a different language.
Yeah.
It's different language. And also, I think like when we're out and about, I want to be in the moment. And as soon as you take your camera out or your phone out, you're not in the moment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's really hard for me. Like even interviews, I said, well, I'm going to start doing like a little clip during an interview. And I feel like I'm totally disengaged when I do that. So it's really hard. That's why you find people that are specialized in it and you just hire them.
That's exactly right. And so you can just focus on your passion.
You just focus on what it is you want to do. And there you go.
I was thinking of starting, you know, that guy who walks around New York and say, what do you do? Or where do you live?
Oh, yeah.
I'll say, what do you cook?
Oh, that's a cool idea.
That's a great one.
Do you cook? No, you don't, you know.
Why don't you? You know, ask the questions. Like, get down to the nitty gritty of it, right?
Well, that guy has gotten incredibly famous doing that, too. That's crazy. He's got celebrities on where he's like, what do you do for a living? And then tours their house sometimes. Yeah. You know the guy we've seen on Instagram for the videos? Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a cool idea, though. What do you cook? What is your favorite dish? Do you cook it? Why not? That kind of stuff. You could do little quick interviews.
It's also a nice way to meet people. You never know who you're going to meet asking that question, right? You might meet somebody that you partner up with something. You know, you just never know. It's kind of like an icebreaker because you're just some person on the street asking them a weird question, but it might turn into something, another great conversation or just something great. You never know.
Well, that's why I love the idea of your show, even the next level of like going there, because I think of like Anthony Bourdain and all these shows where they're going to like restaurants, but nobody ever goes to like the village the or real, the family.
The real treasure.
Right.
Yeah,
The things that are potentially at risk of being lost at some point.
So this is how it sort of started. Like, I went to Morocco on this school project. It was after school. I got a little grant to do this research in Morocco, and I went there. And Israel has like maybe 50% people from Northern Africa. So okay. I was very familiar with the food that they made, and it was all home-cooked stuff. Like, I had it their home.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up people at school, kids at school, and I, you know, I've been helping them cook. And I went to Morocco, and the food was in the restaurant was nothing like what I knew. It was very, very different.
Yeah.
So that's when I grabbed that grandma, and I'm like, with my very broken Arabic, I'm like, can you show me how you cook? And she took me into this courtyard. You know, they cook in the courtyard in the old city, in the Medina. And we're just cooking all day, you know, because it's two different worlds.
Of course.
And they don't meet, you know. And
no, it's mass production.
To me, that's where the treasures are. And then they're disappearing because, you know, women aren't going to be in the kitchen all day doing that kind of stuff anymore.
Right. That's what I meant by they're at risk of being lost forever. Plus, it seems like a lot of these families and villages or whatever would be excited to that someone's interested in the way that
I think so.
And it would be fun to watch.
And
that's
I think
the other
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. People will, there'll be an audience for sure. Yeah.
I think that's, there's something with that.
It would be great if it's filmed, but I was just thinking books, but
filmed would be fun to watch though.
I think film is the way to go because of where we are in society.
So maybe one would lead to the next. So.
Well, because you could, the whole show could be about the making of the book. And it would be interesting to watch.
Yeah, the unfolding of it.
Investors out there, nobody's ever done this. I haven't heard of this.
We got to yell our thoughts.
That's
another thing. There's a book called The List. Have you heard of it?
No.
You should read it. And the guys say, we were taught to keep our wishes. You know, you see a fallen star and you like, don't tell anyone, or like you blow candles.
And you keep it quiet, but you don't speak it into the universe.
We should do the opposite. Yeah. We should tell, and he does these meals, like let's say 10 people, and like everybody shares their dream. And then we see, how could we help? Maybe someone knows someone.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, maybe, you know, there's a way to move that forward somehow for each other.
Yeah.
Scream it out.
So it's another thought I had of doing in my space to do a list dinner.
Okay.
To do a dinner. And like, I'll just cook the dinner and then we could all talk about our dreams.
Oh, I love that.
We are
absolutely of the mindset that you cannot manifest your future like that without talking about it, without putting it out, without speaking it out in the world. And we have known people.
And you have to believe it, too.
Despite your anxiety.
But
doubts. You have to believe that it'll happen. Now,
but it helps.
Is it going to happen in your time frame? Maybe not.
Yeah.
But whatever, when it comes, you have to be aware, right? You have to be paying attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the opportunity, because you, I feel it can like pass you by if you're not.
Your own beliefs in your dream grow after you speak it too, because otherwise you're questioning inside. And do I want to say this out loud because it's embarrassing or whatever?
And you get excitement about it, you know, it sparks
We've absolutely seen people we know that have manifested, is what they call it, their successful businesses as a result of just talking about it and putting it out there and having
we've done it with moving up here.
Oh, that's true.
Many people are in an position where you could leave your house in Florida.
Keep it.
Yeah. Move to another state. Find the right space that you needed at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it all literally lined up. If it wasn't lining up, you couldn't believe that it was happening, you know? It's like, we needed a house by December 1st. Couldn't find anything. All of a sudden, this house came up December 1st. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just all these little things that
I love when that happens.
We're in the process of doing that now for where we want to build or buy. So I'm 100% on board with your idea. And it seems like a really nice time to do it, because now you've got that communal vibe. You've sort of established a little bit of a relationship with each other.
Yeah.
And it feels safer maybe to go ahead and do that then, because there's a rapport already in the room. So I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, best wishes to you. We're so excited to come and check out a class. Yeah. And I mean, I think this is great for any of you Floridians that are coming up into the Asheville area.
What a fun thing to do.
Because we always look for stuff like that that's like a little different, and not just the cookie cutter things to do when you come to visit a place as a tourist. You know what I mean? We're always looking for things that are a little different and that are really a part of the local community.
It's also great for, there's so little for kids to do downtown, and yeah. I see a lot of tourists dragging their kids shopping. Nothing could be worse.
Kids, so that's a great thing
to do it for the whole family. You know?
And it's one of those few things that you go do and you actually bring home valuable. I mean, a lot
something
of the time
you're
going to the park or something. It's a fun day, but you're not bringing back anything you can continue to use. So I love it. And we're going to do a date night out of it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, can't wait. Schedule it, baby.
I will for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you had
for
fun.
Me. It was great.
And if we have you on again, you have to bring the puppy over so that we can introduce.
I'll bring some food too.
You can when you're bored, just call us. Just come right over. We love to be fed.
No doubt.
Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. I got to remember to look at the camera. We just love that you guys support us so much. And we love this new little community that we're building up here in Asheville. And all of you have been giving us such great feedback for people to check out.
Indeed.
So thank you so much for that. And remember, at the end of each and every day,
it's all fine and dandy.
Hi guys, we hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, we would love a review. So make sure to head over to your Apple Podcast app or whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us a 5-star review. Also, give us a like and a follow on our social media. You can find that all under Fine and Dangy. And if you want to find out more about our guest or about us, head over to fineanddangy.com.